Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It's Jeff S., Rural 62 Group and Silkworth, PA. So you can be Jeff.
Jeff Strelzig, I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Jeff for asking me to come down and speak tonight, and thank you guys for having me. You know, it's always an honor and a privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I mean anything, because Alcoholics Anonymous absolutely saved my life. You know, and when I think, you know, when they say that the joy is in the journey, it by far is. Because when I think about the path that I had to take, it brings tears to my eyes. You know, it truly does. And my sobriety date is 7-22-08. My home group, like you said, is the Rule 62. It's out in Lake Silkworth. We meet Tuesday nights at 7:30. I think it's the absolute the greatest home group in the world, you know. And you know, it's an open discussion meeting. And the last Tuesday of every month, you know, we have our celebrations. And last month we had 21 people celebrate, and the majority of them went multiple years. And it's a growing group. I remember years ago when I went out there, there was 9 people, you know, and now you can't find enough chairs like here to fill the room, you know. It's just a beautiful thing, people carrying the message, you know. And, you know, so I'm going to do my best to tell you, you know, what it was like, what happened, and how it is for me today, you know. And I grew up in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, you know, and, you know, now that I have some awareness from the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and these principles, you know, now that I think back from when I was a kid, I was never truly happy. Never. From when I was a kid. I never felt a part of anything my whole life at all. I had that hole in the soul that the big book talks about, you know, that spiritual malady, that emptiness. It sucked the life out of me for 27 years, you know. I had no idea what was wrong with me, and I just remember I just didn't feel like a part of much. I didn't feel like I fit in. I was bouncing around from group to group in high school, throwing myself into sports, women, cars, anything to fill that hole at the time, which I had no idea what I was doing, you know. And I still remember when I picked up my first drink. It was at the age of 16, and I absolutely, absolutely 100% fell in love. You know, and it was with my best friend growing up. His parents were kind of lenient. We used to party in his basement, you know. And I remember having a couple beers and then going home, and I couldn't wait. Like, that was a Friday night. And I remember Saturday, like, are we doing this again? You know, because it was awesome, because it solved all my problems, you know. And alcohol definitely became the solution in my life. And I say the solution because without alcohol, and I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but drugs are a part of my story. And without the alcohol and drugs, I probably wouldn't be here today. You know, alcohol kept me alive long enough to get me here. You know, without that solution, I probably would have killed myself a long time ago. You know, and, you know, so my drinking started off, you know, just probably like the majority of the people on the weekends here and there. And it just made me feel so good, and I can just be who I wanted to be and just fit in with everybody and be happy that it became a more daily thing, you know. And then I progressed to, you know, other things. You know, I think I paid my first consequence when I was 16. You know, I got a simple start charge and got taken out of high school, and I got to go in front of, you know, the Honorable Judge Chivarella, which I don't know if any of you guys ever heard of him. And, you know, it was my first time in trouble, and never been underage or nothing. And, you know, he put me in the juvenile detention center. And at the time, I was like, God, this guy is a prick, you know what I mean? I was like, I hate this guy. You know, and now I view it like he probably helped save my life. You know what I mean? Regardless of why he did it or what, it probably helped save my life. You know, so the consequences started coming quick, and I think that was about 17. You know, and I proceeded to drink. I played basketball in high school. You know, I started from a freshman, you know, and basketball was my thing. I trained in the summer with my coaches, and the drinking just took over. It just absolutely took over. And I'm showing up to games hungover, and before I know it, I'm on the bench. I'm not a part of it anymore. You know what I mean? I'm right in the bench, and I'm barely passing with C minuses and D's. You know, not putting any effort in the school at all. You know, and I think they just passed me to get me out of the school, basically. You know, they kind of slid me through the door, and so I graduated high school in 1998, and I got out of high school, and I had these great plans and goals and, you know, what I wanted to be and what I wanted to do, and it didn't work out like that. Not even close. You know, and I remember getting a car, a brand new car, out of another make me feel good, you know what I mean, an outside material thing, and getting a brand new car, and I had a full-time job, life isn't so bad, but I mean, I'm working Monday through Friday, and I'm partying all weekend, all night. And when I drank. I blacked out every time I drank, I think. I was a blackout drinker. I had never had a couple beers or like, what didn't make sense to me is like, you know, a girl or a guy was drinking went like, not finishing like a glass of wine or something. I was like, I'll finish it for you. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, that was insane to me. That's how insane my thinking was in my perception. I'm like, well, he's wasting this perfectly good bottle of vodka. You know, like, I was like, let me have that, you know, I just drank and I drank, you know, I started going to colleges, you know, just to party. I never went to college, you know. So I started traveling to like Kutztown and Bloomsburg and all over the place. I loved college, but just to drink, you know. I went to see my buddy so much, like people thought I was actually a resident on campus, you know, I loved it. I loved the atmosphere. I loved it. That's all they wanted to do was drink on the weekends. I'm like, I'm there. You know what I mean? That's what I did. I drank and I drank and I drank. And the consequences started coming. You know? And consequences were never enough to get a guy like me even close to sober or surrendered or wanting to stay sober. You know, not even close. Somehow, it was December 4th, 2000. I was down in Bloomsburg partying, I was doing some substances down there too. I don't know how, but I live in Wilkes-Barre, and I left Bloomsburg and I wound up on the turnpike. I have no idea how, with one of my buddies in the passenger. And this is about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm under the influence of alcohol, I'm going about 85 miles an hour, and I hit the barrier. I hit the median. I guess from the impact on the airbags, I went out the back windshield, you know, he went out the side window, which was just crazy to me, you know, I remember waking up, you know, the turnpike's 2 lanes, and I'm like a couple miles from the exit, and I still remember before it happened, like, only a couple miles, you can do this, you know, I'm laying in the right lane on the turnpike. I wake up there, my head has like a gaping, like gash down the middle of it, blood's pouring out of it. I have broken bones everywhere. My buddy just got like road rash pretty bad, and he was like literally holding my head together on the road, you know? There's bright lights coming and I can't move. And I'm in and out of consciousness, and it's a tractor trailer. And I'm just, even at this point in my life, when I was only 20 years old, I was like, just take me. Please take me. Because I had enough pain and suffering. You know, somehow this guy had seen me. You know, it's December, it's cold, it was foggy that night, he seen me and swerved and missed me, and my car was in the left lane. Flipped the car on its roof, slid it like almost 200 feet down the turnpike on its roof, you know. The next thing I can remember, I woke up in a helicopter, and they were life flighting me to CMC in Scranton. And then I passed out again, I guess, and they're telling me to stay awake, I remember, and I woke back up, and I asked the lady, like, that was working on me, am I going to be all right? You know, they're supposed to tell you you're going to be all right no matter what, you know? And she tells me, well, we don't know, honey, because you lost a lot of blood. And I'm like, that is awesome. You know, I'm thinking, like, you know, like, I don't even know where I'm at, what's going on. Everything hurts on my body. I broke a collarbone, broken arm. I had a gold chain on it, dug like 2 inches, just missed that bit, that jugular thing in my neck. I was absolutely a mess. My poor mother, you know, I'll jump back real quick to my childhood. I grew up without my father. They got divorced when I was 3 years old, and he's a functioning alcoholic. And I have an older brother, too, who's a functioning heroin addict. And a younger brother who I took in with me from my mother's house, who's on his way to rehab this week. So you pretty much get the idea, you know? And I have a sister, too, but she's, quote, normal, you know? Whatever the hell that means, you know? But, you know, I remember, you know, back to not being a part, like, I remember playing sports and everyone had their family there and I didn't, you know. And it just made me feel like over here and everyone else was over there, you know. And so my poor mother's raising me from the door, basically. And I probably literally took at least, you know, 10 years off my poor mother's life because of my actions, you know. And because I remember all the times I was in that jail, I called my mother, you know, to bail me out, even with my own money. And she's like, no. She's like, at least I know you're safe. And she stopped coming to get me. She's smart enough, finally. You know, and so I'm on my way to this hospital where they're, you know, airlifting me to. And they call my mother and tell her she needs to come up to the CMC immediately. And she's like, is he okay? And they're like, we don't know. And the CMC is like a half-hour drive from where I grew up, and my mother's driving up there with my little sister, who's 7 years younger than me, so she's about 11 at the time, I think, somewhere around there, and not knowing whether I'm dead, alive, going to die, going to live. And I never realized any of this while I was in the middle of insanity, you know, what I was doing to my family and my loved ones, you know. And they got up there, and for some unknown reason, they had me in the operating room, and they left my little sister and my mother. So my little sister got to see them cutting off my clothes because they were wringing them out with blood. Me laying on a table. You know, that's what my family got to observe. You know, and I remember the last thing I remember before I woke up in the intensive care unit was there was some guy from a church there with me, and I don't really know what was going on, and I don't really know how I survived. And I woke up in intensive care, and at the time it was like the best thing that could ever happen, because I woke up and there was a button in my hand. And I was like, wow, this is great. I'm like, hit that again for me, will you? You know, and like it was just put me back to sleep, you know. And it's probably one of the few times I didn't need an opiate, you know, like it, because I was in severe pain. And I remember a bunch of my friends came up and they brought me clothes because I had no clothes, just a gown on, because they cut them all off. And, you know, I remember all my friends sit with me, and I remember telling them, like, I don't want to live like this anymore. I just don't want to live like this. But I didn't know how not to at this point. I had no idea, you know. And they said, we'll help you. You know, they blamed it on the other stuff. You can just drink. You'll be okay. You know, and that's what I thought for years. And I didn't have insurance at the time. So the hospital kind of kicked me out pretty quick. I couldn't even walk yet. And they took me out in a wheelchair. My friends carried me into my mother's house. And everyone took care of me. I couldn't even give myself a bath or nothing like that, you know. I just remember getting home. And they gave me prescription meds, and I drank and I took them like they were candy. And I was in my glory. I didn't care about the $20,000 car I just wrecked, and that my insurance actually ran out the day before I wrecked it. So there was no car coming back, you know, and it just didn't seem to bother me. Like, my friends went to the junkyard, one brought me my blinker. You know, the other one brought me another part, and I'm just like, I thought it was humorous. I thought it was funny. You know, like, I was just like, wow, look at this. I'll show this to my kids one day, you know. And so, you know, my alcoholism really took off after that. And like I said, I started experimenting with other substances and getting really involved. And traveling all over the place, traveling to bad neighborhoods, and putting my life in danger along with, you know, with other people's life in danger. And I was down in North Philadelphia, and I didn't want to give him my money, and I got stabbed 7 times in the back. And I can't really tell you. You know, I didn't even care about the poor girl that was dating me at the time. You know what I mean? I just wanted to get what I needed to make myself feel right and stop this thing from spinning. You know, and I remember when it happened, like, I don't even know. Like, it just, nothing fazed me. Nothing. It didn't matter what it was. You know what I mean? It really didn't matter. And I could have had all the consequences in the world, and it just didn't matter. You know, and I ended up going to jail in Philadelphia, and I got out of CFCF down there, and the first thing I did, you can take a guess probably, you know, I had some money on me, I definitely didn't come back to Wilkes-Barre, you know, and this is after getting released from jail, you know, and so I come back up here, and my mom finds out, blah, 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 so I'm on my way to my first rehab. Not because I want to go, and definitely not because I want to get better, you know. And I leave the detox AMA, you know, and I leave there, and I need a car, so there's a bunch of cars in the parking lot, so I proceeded to take one, you know. I mean, the insanity that was in my life, and I'm just trying to, I'm not trying to share war stories or anything with you. I'm trying to, you know, so you can relate with me and understand, like, the insanity, absolute insanity that was in my life. And that I definitely shouldn't be standing here in front of you today. Definitely. You know? But God had other plans, you know? And so the next several years, that's my path. Detox, jails, institutions, detox, jails. So then I'm in Luzerne County prison once, and they thought, you know, maybe, I remember one of my cellmates years ago said, Jeff, do you ever think all these problems have to do with the drink and the drug? And I was like, no, not at all. It's everything else and everybody else. And so they sent me to rehab from jail like 90 days short of my sentence. And I didn't want to go. I really didn't. I was content with playing cards, getting 3 meals a day, and not having no responsibilities and not having to face them, you know? And I remember getting up there, and these people were awesome, and they tried to offer me this, and I got escorted out in the rehab the same way I came in. You know, I had substances brought into the rehab, and it was just absolute, like, insanity, just constantly. It was better for me to go back there than to stay in rehab and be a free man. You know, and that's the insanity in my life and the thinking. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a problem with the drink and the drug. That was my solution. I have a thinking problem, a big thinking problem. You know what I mean? And that was my path. So the rehab eventually, you know, they take me back again, you know, and I couldn't stay out of trouble. You know, my mother's just pulling her hair out, and that was a fabulous idea to relocate me, you know, the geographical cure, you know, and at the time, I was all for it, because I'm like, it's the area, it's the people, you know, and I had no idea that wherever I went, I brought myself and my thinking, you know, so they moved me to Illinois with my godparents, who were kind of elderly, you know. And, you know, I didn't really hear much in the rehab, so I probably detoxed forever. And the only thing I really heard was, you know, go to meetings, get a sponsor. And the rest of the stuff was kind of therapeutic to me, you know. And I got off the plane there, and I definitely didn't do any of it. I got a job. You know what I mean? I started going to the gym again, and I got a job. And I knew everything that was going to fix me. You know what I mean? If I can just get the job, you know, get out on my own, go to the gym, get the girl, you know what I mean? And everything's going to be fabulous. Well, I got all that. And I started drinking after about 5 months dry. And I was just drinking. And everything was okay. I had my own place. I had a great job out there. And my family was talking to me from out here. And you know, things were good. And I had no idea that, you know, about this allergy of the body, you know what I mean, and about the phenomenon of craving, you know what I mean, and when I put that first one in, I don't know when I'm going to stop, you know, usually it's handcuffs, it's out of money. All my resources are gone. And I proceeded after a year to get, or a couple of years actually, to get back into substances and like real heavy drinking. And I dated this girl out there for almost 6 years. Pretty much had a hostage. And I came home one day, and let me backtrack a little bit. And so I'm on my way back from Akron, Ohio. I definitely wasn't doing nothing good out there. And she's with me, and I'm driving the car. Now, I have no license from the aggravated DUI, and I had two or three driving on a suspended from Missouri County. So I have no license, and I'm driving. And I'm going through this little tiny town, and I'm doing 74 to 65, and I get pulled over. And I'm like, oh, boy. I'm like, and a moment of clarity came in my head. Be honest with me. Just tell him you don't have a license, this and that. And I did. You know, and before that, he came up and got my ID card. That's all I had. And he came back to the car, and then I see two more cruisers pull up. And I'm like, this isn't good. And she's sitting in the car like, what are you not telling me? What's going on? And I'm like, I have no idea. And then they get, I'm like, I don't have a license. She didn't know that. And she's like, well, I know that now. You know, and they get out of their car, and they put the lights on the car, and they draw their guns, and I'm just, hands on the steering wheel. She's like shaking. I'm like, well, I didn't even know what was going on. And I guess when they ran my information, it came up armed and dangerous. And the funny part was it wasn't me, it was my older brother. You know, so I'm like wondering what's going on here. And they're like, do you have any weapons, Mr. Strelzik, in the car? And I'm like, weapons? I'm like, no, there's no weapons in the car. And she's like, you have a gun in the car, son? And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, no. And so they took me off to their little dinky county jail, and you know, I was coming back, and I had money on me. I posted my little $100 bail, and I talked to some of my cousins. I have several cousins that I never knew I had that lived out in Illinois, and they were pretty much like me. And they've been through the system, and I said, well, what's going to happen? This is my first offense in the state of Illinois. And they said, oh, nothing. They have something similar to like an ARD program that they have up here, or like drug court or whatever. And they're like, oh, you just get 2 years. You won't even have to report or none or a year. And I was like, great. So I go up, and I had a really good job. I was welding then. I was working for Rydell's competitor. And so I go up there, and I'm not qualified to get a court-appointed attorney or whatever. And the judge wants to do it. He postpones it instead of, this is traffic court, too, postpones it to do a PSI on me, which is a pre-sentence investigation. So he gets my record from out here, which is lovely, you know. And so I talked to the state's attorney, and he's like, well, listen, we have to give you, like, you know, 20 days in jail. And, you know, I had recommendations from my job and all that, and I wasn't doing much, but I was just drinking on the weekends. You know, to me, that was good. I wasn't hardened on other stuff at this point. And so I go back up in front of him, and out in Illinois, you get day for day for a nonviolent crime. So I'm like, 10 days, beautiful. I need a break from work anyway, you know? And I go back up, and the judge definitely didn't see it like that. And he upgraded the charge, I think it was a misdemeanor 3, to a felony. And he gave me some time, you know. And he said, it seems like you got out of a lot of stuff in the past, Mr. Strelzik. And you know, I was a complete smartass back then. And I think I said, yeah, I had a lot of good lawyers, you know. And this is after he already sentenced me, so it really didn't matter. Like, he's... And the sentence was so like excessive. It wasn't even funny. Guys were going in front of him, second, third DUI, getting 30 days, 15 days, day for day. And so he, you know, he sent me away, and I'm in there, and I'm like, my alcoholism is in full blown effect, and I'm like, I want to kill this man, absolutely kill him. I'm like, I had the place, the girl, good job. And I never looked at it like, well, maybe if I wasn't driving illegally once again, I would have never met this man. You know? And, you know, so I'm sitting in the county and over there, and I'm thinking about, you know, after they moved me on the block and stuff, I'm thinking about, I should just bury myself in this pelt and suffocate myself because I can't do this. I can't do this. You know, like a couple months, whatever, it's fine. But I'm like, I can't do this. I'm not built for this. You know, and I didn't. And you know, obviously, it was a great learning experience, let me tell you. I met a lot of awesome people in there. They showed me how to do a lot of great things, you know. So, you know, I'm in there and I'm hanging out with these people and they give me a little bit of power, and power for a guy like me when I'm spiritually sick is deadly. And I'm a trustee, so I'm allowed everywhere. I can free movement everywhere. And my girlfriend, for some unknown reason, stayed with me the whole time. And she's coming up to see me and bringing me stuff in. You know what I mean? Like, I'm making her do it. She don't want to do it. You know, and that's how I lived in there. Constantly. The same thing. Just, I needed to treat my alcoholism, you know? And an AA meeting in there definitely didn't qualify for that, you know? So I'm making it through it. The time's coming to the end. And the whole time in there, I'm like, you know, like, I have money saved. I worked a lot. I'm like, I just like to kill this guy. You know what I mean? Like, this resentment stuck with me for years. For years it kept me sick. So the old state's attorney from that county where I was sentenced came to see me, and he promised, you know, her family and me that if we gave him, you know, a significant amount of money, that he was a defense attorney now, that he would get me a sentence reduction, you know, because the sentence was so excessive, and it was traffic court, you know, so we pay him the money. And I'm thinking, like, you know, I'm getting ready, you know, I'm putting my greens back on, you know, I never wore them ever. So, you know, I got a haircut, look all nice, I'm going to court, I'm thinking I'm going home, you know what I mean? I think I already had like 7 or 8 months in, so I'm like, I'm going home, you know, they're bringing me, and I'm driving in this van, and I said to the sergeant, I said, where are we going? He said, we're going back to Piatt County. I'm like, are you kidding me? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, you know you're going in front of Judge Freeze again. I'm like, are you kidding me? They put me back in front of the same judge for a sentence reduction. Well, he wasn't happy. You know what I mean? I mean, it was like he walked out of the courtroom when he seen me, pretty much. You know what I mean? And I was just like, it made me even more sicker. You know, so I get out sometime in February, after all the holidays. So the first thing I do when I get out, I got a nice 2-hour drive back because they had me out in the middle of nowhere. The first thing I do is stop and get a 6-pack. You know, I'm not grateful to get out. Maybe I can straighten out my life. Let's write some booze again. Right to my solution that I've had my whole life. I proceeded to, start traveling to areas out there. She caught on and I get kicked out of my own house. And I'm back where I started in Pennsylvania. Now I'm homeless on the streets of Illinois. In a big city that I don't really know anyone. No one good anyway. It's going to help me, you know. My mother sends me, once again, a bus money. She didn't smart enough to send the tickets. She sent bus money. Wired it to me. And I definitely didn't use that to come back to Pennsylvania. You know, and I just didn't care. I didn't care where I lived, where I stayed, nothing. And eventually my godparents came back, and they lived down by St. Louis, and they picked me up and drove me back here 14 hours, you know. And once again, I'm checking back into rehab, in worse shape than I've ever been in my whole life. I think I was 110 pounds. I couldn't walk. The nurses had to help me outside to smoke. I'm just a mess. I'm crying every day. I just don't want to die. You know what I mean? I absolutely want to die. He said, you know, something's got to be different this time. I went to treatment, and I completed treatment for the first time. I got out and did nothing again. Absolutely did nothing again. just wasn't willing to entertain there was anything bigger than drinking and drugs, you know. And so I'm back again in jail, in detoxes, in jails, in detoxes. And that's the scenario, you know. And so eventually I go to a place in Allenwood called White Deer Run. And, you know, for the first time, the cops really weren't on my back. My family wasn't pushing me because they were already out of my life. You know what I mean? I was pretty much banned from my mother's house. You know, and I'm down there, and they only funded me for detox. And I'm like, no way. You can't send me back to Wilkes-Barre, only detox, you know. And then they drove me back, got me funding for a rehab, and I said, I need more. And they sent me to York, Pennsylvania. And I was pleading and begging with them to send me because I really believed in my heart my life was on the line. And so they loaded me up in a van again. I'm on my way to York, Pennsylvania with a bag and no money and nothing. And I'm on my way down there and they're pulling up at this beautiful neighborhood. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, is this where I'm going? And they're like, yeah, right there. And they dropped me off at Beaver Street in New York. And I'm like, wow, this is horrible. You know what I mean? And so I would sit out in the stoop at night and hear gunshots going on. I'm like, what the hell is going on? I'm like, what does my life come to, you know? And so I'm in there and I actually, you know, got a sponsor. And these guys, there was something about them. You know, you can see they were truly happy about doing this, you know. And I went up to this guy and I asked him for help. And I really had no idea what Alcoholics Anonymous was about or anything. You know, I just thought he came to meetings and drink coffee, you know. And I learned the hard way doing that, too. That I want to sit in these rooms sober and blow my head off. Or dry, whatever you want to call it. It was always told to me, you want to be sober, you want to be in recovery. You know, and I was one of them guys in and out that was sober. You know, and it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible because my mind don't stop. And, you know, I actually went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time. I don't know how thorough I really was because I definitely wasn't done. You know, and, but for the first time in my life, I got just a little tiny piece of hope in my heart. You know what I mean? I didn't know it was going to be all right, but I had hope. You know, and, I'm back in this recovery house, and I came down with no money, and they threw me out because they couldn't wait till I got my first paycheck. So now I'm like a month and a half sober, back on the streets again. So I'm like, I'm sober. What? This doesn't work either, you know? And I met this guy, Steve, at a meeting down there. And, you know, I thought he was absolutely insane after I got to know him. And he gave me his business card. He said, Jeff, if you ever need anything, call me. So I was like, well, let's use this resource, you know. And so I'm on Market Street in North Pennsylvania, and I'm like, hey, Steve, it's Jeff. You remember me? And he's like, the guy from Wilkes-Barre? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I just got kicked out of recovery house. He's like, where are you at? And I told him. He's like, don't move. I'm on my way back from Baltimore. I'm coming to get you. So I'm standing there with my suitcases, and I'm like, with the phone, I'm like, who is this guy? Like, he's coming to get you. He's like, you're staying with me. I'm like, all right, you know, and I don't even know him. I met him a couple times, and he picks me up. We go to his house, and he's like, "You want to take a shower?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And I take a shower, and I'm like, "What are we doing tonight?" He's like, "We're going to Delaware." I'm like, "Delaware?" You know, so my first night with him, we're on our way to Delaware. And this guy's smiling the whole time. And happy. And I'm sitting in his passenger seat like, this guy's definitely on something. You know what I mean? And it's not just me in the car. There's like four other guys went in the back seat that he probably just met too. And I'm just like, you know, and so, oh, what an ordeal that was anyway. But we're on our way down there, and man, they didn't tell me. Steve definitely didn't tell me what to do. Neither did Greg, because Greg was helping me for a long time, or trying to. And they showed me what to do. You know what I mean? By their actions. You know, and I was really getting happy. You know, I was really getting happy. And so I started just following these guys around, doing what they were doing. And because I definitely, I don't know if I wanted what they had, but I was intrigued by what they had. You know, I was like, there's something about these guys. You know, but I was a little nervous because the word love doesn't come out of my mouth much, even with my family. I can't explain why. I don't know. And these guys, I don't even know them. They're hugging me and telling me they love me. And I'm down there like a nut. And I'm like panicking. I'm like, what is going on here? I call my mother. I'm like, I think I need to get out of here. You know? And I'm like, you know what I mean? I'm like, this guy's hugging me and kissing me. And I'm like, this is weird. You know? And, wow. That's just my, I'm like thinking again. It was so distorted, you know? And, so things, you know, I was on this swing shift job, like 6 to 6 down in New York, because, you know, recovery houses, we want money, get any kind of job. You know, and Steve was like, you're to quit. And I'm like, quit? I just got a job. He's like, yeah, you're to be working first shift and first shift only, because you need to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? And we get sober at night, not at 10 o'clock meetings. And I was like, okay. So I quit. And I ended up getting this first shift job, and I ended up losing the job. And I went to work every day, because, and Steve knows I went every day because he drove me. I didn't have a license for 9 years, you know. And what happened was, it was through a temp agency, and I guess the boss's father hired his kid for the summer, and they let me go. So I'm like distraught. I'm like, Steve, this is what I'm telling you. This is the story of my life. I suited up and I showed up every day like you told me. And nothing changed. And he was like, God shut this door to open up a bigger and better one. I'm like, you're full of shit. You know what I mean? That's what I thought at the time. I'd listen to him, and I'm thinking in my head, you know, like, this guy's just absolutely crazy. And another member of Alcoholics Anonymous got me one of the best jobs I ever had, driving heavy equipment at a stone quarry in New York. And I loved it. And I made exceptional money. And I was like, wow, Steve, you must be on something here. You know? And so I'm traveling. I'm doing all these commitments. And Steve goes, now you're going to go to Delaware and speak on steps 8 and 9. And I'm like, all right, you know? And he's like, you got a shirt and a tie? And I'm like, I'm not wearing a tie. And like, I'm definitely not a tie guy, for people who know me. Like, I'm definitely not a tie guy. Ever, dress pants, none of that. And I was like, Steve, I will go, but I'm not wearing a tie. And he was like, you're not speaking then, because you're representing our sponsorship family. And I'm like, well, it looks like I ain't speaking then. You know? But, you know, I got the tie and went. And, I probably only went because I didn't know if he let me stay in his house, though. You know? It was unreal. Anyway, for you guys that don't know, it was up on this, like, classy, like, golf course on this hill. I mean, it's like a $300,000 house, and we got guys smoking crack, shooting dope, getting drunk, the FBI showing up. Like, it was a real tour, let me tell you. And, you know, it was the longest sobriety I ever had in my life. And it was 7 months. And it definitely, if it did anything, it definitely planted some seeds. And what happened was, the outside stuff got good quick for me. I got the job, the bank account, the money, and you know, Steve had me working with some guys early, and I was running around doing commitments and stuff, and I'm like, Steve, it's time for me to move out, you know. And I left, and I did okay for a couple months, and I started chasing outside things, and I forgot what kept me sober for them 7 months. And it didn't take long, and you can picture the downward spiral came quick. So then I'm on the streets in New York, and of course Steve came back and got me again, and once again I'm off to rehab. And I get out of rehab, and for the first time in my life I'm not afraid to go back to Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. But I always thought it was the area, and I hated it, you know. And so I call Steve, and you know, he's coming up to see me and stuff, and I went back to Wilkes-Barre. And, you know, I'd like to tell you I stayed sober, but I didn't. And so the battle's on again, you know, just in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. And in May 27, 2006, was my next sobriety day. And, you know, I checked myself into detox, you know, with a pocket full of money. And I was just like, in my heart, for the first time, I really wanted this. But one, it don't matter. You know what I mean? Because the ones that get it are the ones that do it. You know, and I stayed sober for 22 months. You know, and the girl from Illinois came back into my life at 3.5 months sober. I don't know, which I don't recommend to anybody. And, you know, things were great while I was living in Pennsylvania, but she wanted to move back to Illinois. And I got to speak with Steve at a convention, and, you know, I asked him, I said, Steve, I'm a nervous wreck, and I don't know what to do here. And he was like, go. And everyone told me to go. Everybody. And I knew in my heart not to go. You know what I mean? And I went. And I proceeded to hurt my back out there. I had two bulges in my back, and it started the vicious cycle again. So once again, I destroy everything out there. I have a house, two dogs, where it's all gone. All gone again. Because I build it up and burn it down. That shit's meaningless to me. You know, and I come back here on a plane, and I just can't wait to get it in. And my last run lasted 6 days. And at the time, the scariest thing ever happened to me in my life. But now I know it was the best thing. No matter how much I put in me, how much I did it, it didn't work no more. My solution was no longer there. It did not work. You know, naturally, I felt the effect, but it didn't stop this thing. You know, and I had money. That wasn't an issue. For the first time, there was no cops chasing me or probation or none. And I can't really describe what happened because I don't know. But all I know is my last thought was I filled a syringe up with a lot of drugs. And I was like, I'm just going to kill myself. Because A, don't work. And I don't work. I'm like, there's nothing left. There's absolutely nothing left for me in this world. And I don't know what happened. I woke up, and my cell phone was in my hand. I called a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he came to the crack house I was in and got me. And I was a mess. I was an absolute mess. And I couldn't get into detox anymore. There was some kind of clause, plus I was there like 2,700 times. And, you know, these guys put their life on hold. Some of them didn't even go to work. They came and sat with me. And through the 22 and a half months I was sober before that, I cleaned up a lot of the wreckage of my past in 8 and 9, especially with my mother, so she was willing to let me come detox on her couch. Poor mother. And these guys sat with me day and night. They absolutely sat with me day and night. And I think I was about 3 days sober, and they're like, it's time. And I went to my first meeting. And I'm hurting. I'm a mess. My body hurts. My head, I don't even know where my head is. You know, I'm spiritually dead, not bankrupt. It's just dead. Absolute dead. And I ran into Jimmy, who came down with me tonight. And I said, Jimmy, I need help. I said, I ain't going to make it. I need help. And I knew where the solution was. You know, and you know, it's like being bit by a poisonous spider. You know, you have the antidote right there. It's the same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. You have the big book and the 12 steps. You want to get better, it's there. You know what I mean? And there's no timeline. There's no how quick, how fast you should go through it. But for a guy like me, I need to get into action quick. Like quick. And I think we did, you know, my fifth step at about 2.5 weeks over. And I didn't get no massive relief or nothing like that. It just showed me, you know, what a selfish, self-centered, liar, cheat, scumbag I've been my whole life. And it also showed me my part in everything. And that it wasn't all these people. And that it was me. And my actions. And my thinking. You know? Nothing to do with these people. You know? Even if my part was this big and theirs was that big, I played a role in everything I did my whole life. There was no one else to blame though. You know? I went home and did 6 and 7 for my hour with God. You know? I asked him just, do something with me, because I don't know anymore. And for the first time in my life, you know, like it talks in step one, like I really truly admitted in my innermost self that I am alcoholic and I could never do this alone. And I have to smash my ideas. If I have any ideas left in here about what's good for Jeff, I'm a dead man. I'm an absolute dead man. You know, and I had a gambling problem too with poker. And when I came back, Jimmy said, "You need to quit gambling." I was like, "You're out of your mind. It's the only thing I got going right now, you know?" And, you know, I battled with him. I don't know if he remembers that conversation, but I battled with him, you know, and something took over me because I don't have that power, you know what I mean? And I was powerless over everything in my life. And I haven't gambled in a long time because it was told to me it's probably going to cost me my sobriety and probably my life. And I just started moving my feet in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And I'm running out of time here, but my license was suspended, and I'll tell you about some good things that happened in sobriety and some bad things. And my license, somebody outside stuff, it just kind of cleared itself up. I just had to do Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, develop a relationship with God, and then give this thing away. You know what I mean? And my sponsor told me, get down in the trenches and start helping people. You know what I mean? And that's all I did. And the outside stuff cleared itself up. After 9 years, I got a driver's license back last February. You know, I got a car. You know, I got my own place. And I was working this, like, kind of average job. And they took some money off me an hour. This is in sobriety, like $4.50 off me an hour. And cut me down to part-time. And I'm living with another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and things aren't going too well there. And so I'm about 6 months sober, and I'm losing my apartment and my job and everything. So I'm like just shaking my head, like, this can't be happening. Never called out of work, nothing, you know. I'm just like, you know, but I knew in my heart for the first time it was going to be okay, that God had a plan for me. And this wasn't my journey. You know, and so what happens is the same thing that Steve taught me years ago, a bigger and a much better door opened, and I got this really good job with this really good company, making more money than I ever made in my whole life, you know what I mean? And it was great and all until my sponsor told me, like, now we really need to clean up some of these events, financial ones. And I'm like, you know, and like I did it, I had to do it. And I wanted to do it. And it felt good. And that's where I got a lot of the relief in 8 and 9, cleaning up the wreckage of my past. Because it was told to me, and my sponsor told me, he said, "Jeff, I don't want to hear that they don't want the money. You find some way to give them their money back because you stole it, you know, in some way, shape, or form, you know." And so what I did, so I started doing amends and writing out checks every pay period and sending them out. And the relief I got was absolutely amazing. I mean, words just can't even express. And then, you know, brought me to 10, 11, and 12, you know, the maintenance steps. Like the book talks about, any business doesn't take inventory daily goes broke. And I don't want to go broke, and I can't afford to go broke. And I'm talking about spiritually broke. You know, and so, I mean, they're such important steps, you know. They truly are, you know, because sometimes it stinks, actually, but, you know, they have such awareness of when you're being selfish, resentful, angry, dishonest, you know, and it's like now the battle in my head won't let me go until I take the action and, like, make a mess to clean it up. It just won't let me go, you know, and some other interesting things happened when I was sober, too. It's probably about 4 months ago, and I'm on my way to the gym. I actually just left the recovery house. A guy I sponsor over there, and I'm like, "I'll pick you back up after the gym, and we'll go to a meeting." And I pull out of his house, and I get pulled over for cutting in front of a cop. And I couldn't see him. There was cars parked on both sides of the road, and I mean, it wasn't close to an accident or nothing, you know. And he comes up, license registration and all that insurance. I'm like, the first time in my life I have all that. This is valid. You know what I mean? Like, this is valid. You know? And so he's like, "All right, I'll just run it." He goes to the car, he's running it. And he comes back and he's like, "Can you please step out of the car, sir?" And I know what that cue means. I'm going somewhere. You know? And I'm in shock. Like, shocked. And he's like, there's a warrant out of North Philadelphia from 9 years ago. I'm like, what? Now, in the meantime, to get my license back, a state representative helped me. They got a list of all the warrants, all the magistrates that I owed money to. And I went and handed these people hundreds of dollars at every place. And I cleaned up the wreckage. They ran my record for this job, and my background came back clear. So there was no warrant. Now there's a warrant. So the, you know, previous years, the first thing would have happened would have been like, you know, initially, I'm not going to lie, I was like, everything's gone. Everything's gone again. But something just took over me. Like, I was like, it's going to be okay. I'm like, this isn't going to happen. I'm like, God has got me. You know, he truly does. And so I'm in the paddy wagon on my way over to this magistrate. I'm calling my mom, my sponsor, because the cop slid the cell phone in my pocket. And they wouldn't believe me. I'm like, I'm on my way to jail. They're like, yeah, right. You know what I mean? I'm like, Mom, I'm serious. I'm like, you got to come get me. You know, and there was no bail. And so I'm sitting in jail, and I'm like, you know, I'm praying. I got a big book. I'm going to meetings and trying to help some guys in there. You know, maybe the bigger picture. God put me here for a reason. And I was able to see that this time. And I finally got a phone blackout, made some calls, and I hear all these people are running around trying to get me out of there. People are coming to put money on my books. That never happened. You know? And they sent all my information down to the district attorney of Filbert Street in Philadelphia, and they said, we don't want him. They said, tell him to keep doing what he's doing, and we wish him the best of luck in his sobriety. And they dropped the charges. And I got out. I picked up a couple of the guys that I was sponsoring, and we went to a meeting. And the funniest thing happened. I'm outside of the meeting, and a new guy goes, Jeff, and I'm like, yeah. And he's like, can you help me? I'm like, are you sure? I just got out of jail like 3 hours ago. You know what I mean? And it was so funny. It warmed my heart, you know. And I don't know. It's been one hell of a journey. And let me tell you something. The joy is definitely in the journey, and life's still going to happen. And it's still going to short us. You know what I mean? Them trials and those spots that are in the big book are still going to come. It's all in our thinking and our perception and our actions. You know, at least for me. And I don't have this power. Believe me, I don't. Because I should be dead or in jail. You know what I mean? And the minute I stop doing this, that's where I'm going. You know, and today it's like, I don't do this because I have to do it. I do this because I love to do this. It warms my heart sitting down with a new guy that had nothing, like me. A bag, nowhere to go, broken, beaten. And I see the lights come on. And you see him get happy. And before you know it, he's helping another guy. And I'm like, this is insane. You know what I mean? And that's what keeps me coming back. Just the new guy. You know what I mean? Just seeing him resurrect his life. You know what I mean? Because sometimes we can't see it in ourselves, but there's guys with 6 months that have everything I want, with 2 months. You know what I mean? It's so beautiful, and it's all in our, it's in our heart and in our feet, and how quickly and how fast and how honest and thorough we are, and we move them, we get these results. So it's all how truly bad do you want this? And if you want it, you move your feet. You know what I mean? That's one thing I never did, and it almost cost me my life. And, you know, today doesn't have to be that way. You know, and I want to really thank you guys for having me once again. And like I said, it's been an honor and privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous because it literally saved my life. Thank you.